Success Match Show, broadcasting live from the Skyview Network Studios.
Today, thanks for being with us. NFL Draft is tomorrow, so we'll go heavy into that on today's show. Todd Graham will be with us. I want to talk to Todd. I saw him at a speaking event last night at the National Football Foundation, and I talked to him about his players and their draft status, and I thought it'd be good to bring him on the show today, so we'll have Todd Graham with us. I also talked to him about his quarterback situation now that spring ball is through. Pedro Gomez will join us in about 15 minutes. What do you do with Shelby Miller? Really, what do you do with Shelby Miller? And I'm also watching this team now as we're coming towards the end of the month. I think we have enough of a sample size. I don't think that their outfield defense, especially with Tomas and Owings in center and in left and in center, is that great. And I don't know what they can do about it. And I don't know if they feel like, no, we're just fine. Shelby Miller last night, I saw somewhere where somebody had the headline, making strides or something. Like, are you joking? He walked four in five innings. He allowed a three-run bomb to Brandon Moss. He allowed five earned runs. I'm not looking at his progress, not for the amount that they gave up for Shelby Miller. Okay, and he may get it turned around. I'm sure they can say, hey, you started doing this better. I'm sure there's some of that. But if anybody's going to sit here and say, wow, this is all heading in the right direction, so I'm going to talk with Pedro on that front.
And he didn't get a lot of help last night from his defense. Chris Owings had another play out in center where I'm going to catch it, I'm going to slide.
Helicopter.
Yeah, it hit him in the leg and then rolled all the way down by the right field line. So technically, he should have been out of the inning before the three-run homer. But that's baseball.
It's baseball. Don't give up the three-run home run.
That's it.
So what are we to make out of ESPN? I've had some people that have said, you know, I see you on the show and you talk about other media outlets. Don't cast stones. Well, I'm not casting stones here. Skip Bayless quit on ESPN yesterday. He's going to go over to Fox Sports One. Fox Sports One is trying to make an impact. I'll give you guys a lot of backstory on this. And some of you are into broadcast. Some of you are not. Some of you say, Brad, I'm out. I just want to hear who the ninth pick in the NFL draft is going to be. We'll get to it, okay? Jamie Horowitz is a widely regarded, highly regarded executive that was with ESPN, ESPN2. And he went over to Fox Sports One, and his whole thing is embrace debate. Let's get two people on and we will have them yell, scream, poke fun, laugh, whatever. And while you may think it's a circus, if you watched First Take, I was not a First Take watcher and I'm still not really a First Take watcher, but when I'm here in the morning and I'm a satellite guy, I don't listen to radio. I don't listen to radio locally. There's nothing there for me. So I watch and listen on satellite, and it may be the MLB channel on Sirius, it may be the NBA channel on Sirius, maybe the NFL channel, maybe the soccer channel. Their soccer channel's terrific. And it may sometimes be ESPN News, and that's usually where I'll find those two, Skip and Stephen A. And I met Stephen A. last December when we were back in New York City for concussion. And, you know, it's a typical person that what you see on the air is not who that person is, that there's an on and off switch. This guy was really subdued, really quiet, very much to himself on the air. You know, what you see is what you see. Skip Bayless is somebody that's been around the industry for a long time. I remember Skip all the way back when he was in the Bay Area as a writer and then in Dallas. And so for him to up and leave and Colin Cowherd up and left, this has been an interesting year for ESPN. Like, if one day Eric came in and he said, I'm out of here, and one day Jared came in and said, I'm out of here, I'd probably be looking at it like, wow, this is a couple of big shots across the bow, what we're trying to do here. And of course, ESPN laid off 300 workers last year. Let go of 300. When you piss off the mouse, is what I was told. When you upset Disney, you're in for trouble. And ESPN's paid all these big rights fees to carry all these games from these sports franchises and these sports organizations. And part of it, too, is those organizations don't like to be criticized. They want everything to be a PR. Everything's great. We've never done anything wrong. So, you know, you put all this together, and this week Mike Tirico left. It's fine. Skip Bayless left. It's fine. They're going to keep moving on. If Max Kellerman is the guy that replaces Skip Bayless, it's fine. Some of you are really into morning debate shows. That show is the highest rated show over on ESPN2. And so it is newsy, I think, to see where guys in our industry are making jumps and moves. And that the debate platform, that just having two guys go back and forth, especially what that show's been all about, there's part of the interruption. You know, I think that's a smarter show myself. I think Wilbon is, Michael lives here part of the year. And Kornheiser, those two guys, it's a smarter show. It's an easier show to understand. There is not a lot of race baiting in that show, if any, at all. I find it to be offensive that we have to sit down and say, well, we're going to turn this into a black and white issue, that every issue is going to be black and white. I don't need that. And yes, there are times where race should be at the front of the debate. But if all you're doing is chasing clicks and you're going to say, we're the highest rated show on ESPN2, which they are, it's like the signature show on that network, on that channel. So it's interesting to see what's gone on the broadcast end of things. You know, ESPN last week had to bounce Curt Schilling. This week, Mike Tirico said, I'm out of here. This week, Skip Bayless said, I'm out of here. So they've also shed themselves of a lot of payroll at a time where that company is not the brand that it once was. It's just not. And there's some really good people there. I mean, Scott Van Pelt is good a guy. Pedro is great. I'm not going to ask Pedro about this stuff. That's not what he's here for. We'll have him on in about 6-7 minutes. But I think on the business side of things, that caught my eye yesterday afternoon and last night. I think the Clippers are in a lot of trouble. Like tonight, I'm going to watch tonight because there's no Blake and there's no Chris Paul. And if you're going to depend on DeAndre Jordan and Jamal Crawford to win games, like Jamal Crawford might shoot the ball 40 times tonight. He's going to do a catch and release thing tonight. And I think Doc Rivers is going to get fired when it's all said and done. What would be interesting about it with the Clippers, if they implode now and they lose this series, and I think they're going to lose this series, you can't take two players like that off the floor and hope to win and think that J.J. Redick and Austin Rivers are going to let you win and will you to win basketball games. Then if you're the owner of the Clippers, you've got to look around and say, what are we doing here? If you're the Lakers, okay, Doc Rivers is a heck of a coach. Doc Rivers has had a heck of a run over there. He's also had a stacked roster. If the Clippers get impatient, if they get to a space where they decide to punch his ticket and the Lakers are sitting there with an open spot, who knows? So I'm keeping an eye on that. I saw where the Lakers, like Calipari's trying to get his name mixed in there. That's fine. Knock yourself out. If that's the direction you want to go, you're going to continue to blow.
And if the Lakers do hire Doc Rivers, it's pretty easy to see what his first personnel move will be.
Oh, he'll bring Austin Rivers.
Oh, yeah.
Over.
Let's make a trade for Austin Rivers. And it would be nice for Doc because he probably wouldn't have to move houses. I mean, you're going to be staying in the same arena.
But, you know, am I a conspiracy theorist guy on that?
No.
I think if you look at just how that's going.
And coaches have an idea when to jump ship.
Yes.
Like when the time, you're not going to get fired, but the time might be right to start looking for another job.
Steve Ballmer has made boatloads of money, and he completely overpaid for the franchise. And I think that's one of those groups. It's kind of like when Jerry was sitting here at the end of Charles, and he had to do a reinvent. Charles didn't want to be here anymore. He tried to do the best that he could in making the deal with Casale and Ori and what's his name? The forward from North Carolina State. Why am I blanking on it?
Chucky Brown.
Downtown Chucky Brown. You know, Jerry tried to do a remake, change coaches. Cotton took over. Players didn't know if he was going to be the guy or not. So then he goes to Ainge. Then they go through the rebuild. When they hung on to Nash too long and they let Amari walk, they went through a pretty quick rebuild, retool. When they let Joe Johnson go, which was a mistake, you have those pivots in any business. And I think the Clippers are at that point with this group of players that if we can't win this year, if I'm Steve Ballmer, I'm not going to give it another year. And I probably let Blake Griffin go. That's a bad injury that he suffered. That's not a torn ACL. That's a bad injury. So both those series are compelling to me. And then, of course, there's no Steph Curry tonight. I'm still going to watch because I think if there's ever a time, I don't know if Klay Thompson feels like he doesn't get enough attention. I don't know that. Everything has been about Steph Curry. Draymond Green, was he disrespected? I don't know. They gave him a big contract. Does he not get enough attention nationally? Well, now is the time. And if you don't close out Houston tonight, then there's going to be more and more pushback on the Warriors, and they can't win without Steph. Steve Kerr gets Coach of the Year yesterday, and I love listening to Steve Kerr. He is so much smarter than I'll ever be, A. B, he's just on top of connecting with his players. And the first thing he did yesterday when he was named Coach of the Year is he thanked the players for buying in. We've talked about this through the years. I've had coaches, GMs that have used analogies like the NBA locker room is 12 different islands on 12 different oceans, and they're 12 different corporations, and they're just all about themselves. The Warriors have every right to have that kind of attitude. It's just guys looking out for their own. Instead, they don't. They feel like a team that's all fun, all in. Maybe that's why Steve Nash is a consultant of theirs. It's kind of like the Nash way of doing business when he was here with the Suns. So that's on my mind. The Chargers are the team talking about trading out. So I was talking to a friend of mine in media this morning over in San Diego. And Peter brought this up yesterday, Peter King, that the Chargers at number three are looking at trading out of that spot. The Chargers are in an interesting position because they're now pushing to get a new stadium. Of course they are. It's funny how Los Angeles is sitting there and they get the Rams, but there's always the threat of another team going to LA. It's kind of why they're like the Raiders meeting with Las Vegas today. I think it'd be terrific for the Raiders to go to Las Vegas. What a perfect fit. Why not? They could play at dumpy Sam Boyd Stadium in the interim until a new palace is built for them. This whole thing about, well, gambling, and gambling's everywhere. Shut up. Gambling's everywhere. You don't think a player in Arizona or in Seattle can be influenced by a gambler or in Miami? Come on. So I think that for the Chargers, though, building a stadium. And by the way, Eric, did you see this on the schematics of the stadium? They want to put a dome.
I did hear that.
They want to put a dome in San Diego.
And as we talked about, there's only one game that needs a dome year round, the Holiday Bowl.
The Holiday Bowl, it's cold and wet. But if they trade down tomorrow, is that because this is the year they've got to get something for Phillip Rivers? Because now they've got a stadium initiative sitting there. And if they blow this year, you know, if they're 5-11, people are going to be like, eh.
And they need help. I mean, you look at the Chargers, they need defensive line help. They need offensive line help. They need another corner. There's a reason why the teams that don't make the playoffs, there's a reason why they're at the top. And a lot of them are looking to trade back like the Browns did, because you don't need just one position. You need a bunch of guys.
See, and I sit here with Steve Keim here in Arizona. He's already pulled off this big old deal for Chandler Jones. Nothing would surprise me tomorrow night. Nothing.
Michael Floyd being traded? Would that surprise you?
No. Come on. Nothing would surprise me. I'll just take that back. Larry Fitzgerald being traded would surprise
there
me.
There you go.
That's it. Pedro is next. Pedro Gomez, ESPN baseball insider and analyst. A lot around the Diamondbacks I need to get to, and we'll do that next. And then Todd Graham will join us. Stay with us.
For original, in-depth Arizona sports news you care about, follow us on Twitter at Sports360AZ. It's time to talk Arizona Diamondbacks and Major League Baseball with ESPN insider Pedro Gomez. Here's Brad Sesmat.
Well, good to catch up with Pedro Gomez, the new host of First Take. No, I'm just kidding. I'm just kidding. Just kidding. How are you?
I am well. I was surprised to see the ad in today's Republic. That was a surprise.
Well, as long as it's not the obituary column, then I'm fine.
True.
It's nice. Okay, so I went to the game Saturday night, and I first play of the game. Chris Owings is playing helicopter in center field, running this way and running that way. Last night, somewhat the same situation happened. Yasmani Tomas needs a pool net out there with one of those long extendable handles, it seems to me. And I'm looking at them, Pedro, through the first 21 games, saying their outfield defense in center and in left. I get it with AJ not there, but man, oh man, it's a concern of mine. I'll get to Shelby in a minute, and I'll get to Greinke on stuff. Let's start with the outfield defense. What have you seen? What have you heard about that so far?
Well, it's like you said, and with AJ Pollock not there, it's not a surprise that the defense has slipped. There's no doubt about that, and it's going to. That is going to be an issue probably all season long. It's not something that you can correct on the fly, and it's teams that catch the ball and pitch the ball tend to be the teams that are still playing in October.
Right.
I will say this though: when you look at the National League West, you already see the kind of separation that we thought would happen at the beginning of the year, mm-hmm. where the Rockies and the Padres kind of drift to the bottom, and then the Giants, Dodgers, and D-backs are the ones kind of holding, you know, the top of the division up. And when you look right now, I know it's only 3 weeks into the season, a little over 3 weeks, but it shouldn't come as a surprise that that is how it is shaking out, because that's the beauty of 162. You tend to play to what you are.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, as bad as the defense may be in the outfield for the D-backs, they can still pitch, although the pitching hasn't been what it should have been at this point, but it will be. And that's what's going to keep them afloat, and that's what's going to keep them in contention. And I think that's what's going to keep the Dodgers as well as the Giants, all three in contention. And so it should not be a surprise that already you're seeing that kind of separation in the division.
Okay, so reading between what you're saying there, the outfield defense, you can live with that as the season goes on? Or do you think a month into this season that Stu, who you know well, and Tony, who you know well, and Chip have circled around and said, we may have to do something here as the season goes along to shore that up?
No, that definitely is a group that will address the situation if they think it needs to be. And it probably will at some point. The thing is, you can live a little bit with a weaker outfield defense than you can an infield defense. If you don't have infield defense, you're in serious trouble, and you've got to do whatever you can to shore that up immediately.
It's kind of like Gonzo in left field back in the day, right? I mean, Luis, not picking on Luis, but that was a fact. They lived with his offense. He didn't have the best arm out there.
Well, and traditionally, but he made the plays that he needed to make.
Mm-hmm.
And that's all you want, really, when you don't have superior defensive outfielders. Just make the plays you're supposed to make. We're not expecting you to make the circus catch, the Mike Trout, you know, in the gap, over the fence type of catch. Don't worry about those. Just make the plays you're supposed to make, and we'll be fine. And that's like you've said, that's been a little bit of an issue so far, because they're not necessarily making the plays they're supposed to make as much as they should. That if that cannot be addressed, then you can bet that people like La Russa and Dave Stewart and Chip Hale will say, no, we got to do something, because we can't live like this. We cannot play 162. And the investment's been made to contend this year.
Right.
It's not an investment to contend 2 years from now. It's to contend right now. So, you know, you've already swam three quarters of across the ocean in terms of salary. You can't then turn back and say, okay, forget it, we're not going to make it. You've only got a quarter of the way to go when it comes to the type of salary you've spent. So, I would expect them to do something if it cannot be improved. Right now, they're still hanging in there. They're, you know, a game and a half, two games out of first place. They're there. I don't know that you need to press the panic button right now in April. But if we're talking a month from now and things have not improved defensively, I could absolutely see this front office saying, okay, we've got to do something. And La Russa comes from a long history of having done things, whether it was in Oakland or St. Louis. And Dave Stewart, as a player, saw those things take place during his career and knows that, hey, that's just a part of the game. If you're in it, you've got to do what you can right now this season in order to continue to be in it. So that would not come as a surprise if a month from now things have not steadied. I'm not going to say improved, but just steadied themselves.
Sure. Talking with Pedro Gomez, ESPN baseball insider, baseball analyst on the show. Okay, so Shelby Miller has yet to get a win, and he almost has more walks than strikeouts. Pedro, what do we make out of this with him?
Boy, this one is perplexing because the Shelby Miller we saw in St. Louis is not this Shelby Miller. And even the one last year in Atlanta who lost 17 games but had an ERA under 4, that was not this Shelby Miller. This one, you know, walks are inexcusable. Walks kill. We all know all the cliches in baseball. But you just can't. You're killing not only your own ERA, but you're killing your team, really, because when they're out in the field, I've talked to enough big leaguers over the years that that's the last thing that they want. It's the last thing that any player out in the field can swallow easily because it's a free pass. Now, look, as much as I may disagree with, you know, and I have a long history of disagreeing with Curt Schilling in this town, but the one thing that I will say that he is absolutely right about, and he's always said this, is, look, there's still a 70% chance that I'm going to get a guy out if he hits the ball. So I would rather him try to hit the ball and get a hit than me walk him and him not have to swing a bat and get on base. So I will say that Schilling absolutely is right about that. The odds are still in your favor as a pitcher. Even if the guy ropes one, it can still be caught. And that is absolutely something that is going to have to be addressed. I know that Mike Butcher's already talked to Shelby Miller, and I would not be surprised if Dave Stewart, who is, you know, multiple-time All-Star, comes down and says, something's got to be done here. This just can't continue. And it is perplexing because Shelby Miller has the stuff. And you find sometimes that pitchers get into a place where their confidence level is just gone. And they're afraid that everything is going to get hit. And I'm not saying Shelby's at that point, but I've seen pitchers go through that. And I know if you're the D-backs, you're hoping that that's not the case.
See, and I'm not as concerned about Greinke, even though he's given up a ton of home runs already. I've seen him, the outing last week in San Francisco was really good. And in San Diego, I thought he was pretty good.
The one this week was
Yeah, it was You know, you're right. But you also have to look at the competition that he faced as well. That's a darn good team that he was playing against, right?
So yeah, but he has faced darn good teams throughout his career and not looked like that.
So are you concerned then? Are you concerned about Greinke?
Well,
Are you more concerned about Greinke than Shelby Miller? Are you more concerned about Greinke than Miller?
I would say at this point Greinke, because
really?
We're looking now 4 or 5 starts into the season. And this is not the Zach Greinke who we've seen over the last few years. I don't know if something's going on, but it just does not look like the Zach Greinke who we've seen in terms of pinpoint precision when he's pitching, in terms of the command, putting it on a dime wherever he wants. He's leaving pitches up in the zone, and that's alarming. You know, if you did it once or twice, hey, that happens. But we're almost in May now, and it hasn't been rectified. Mm. And that's something that he's always been great at. He's been able to rectify things from start to start, from inning to inning, really, he's been able to throughout his career. And that's not happening right now. And it leads you to believe that there may be something else going on with Zach Greinke.
You mean health-wise?
Exactly.
Hmm. And are you hearing that, or are you just seeing it?
I've heard a little here and there, and you know, it's not surprising that the club doesn't, you know, talk about it. But it's something that this is not Zach Greinke. This is not the Zach Greinke who has performed over the last few years at a high All-Star level, not just an All-Star level, but at a high level. And you know, he may be trying to push through some things. It may not necessarily be physical, like with a muscle or anything like that. It just may be something going on. And he's just not looking like the Zach Greinke who we've seen. Talked to a couple of scouts who say he just doesn't look the same. He doesn't look right. So that leads you to believe, you know, these are scouts that know every little tendency about everybody. So I trust their opinion when it comes to things like this.
Do you think the pressure of the number is in his head because he does have that anxiety about him?
You know what? If it was another pitcher, I would say, yeah, that might be in the equation. With Zach Greinke, no, I don't think so. I don't think he is a guy that is affected by numbers in terms of contracts and things like that. That's not part of who he is. Mm-hmm. I've talked to people who have been his managers, his teammates, and they say that part really is highly doubtful that is affecting him.
So this weekend against Colorado is a big start for him.
I think, you know, they're all big starts, but he's got to start to turn things to what he has been able to do in his career. Mm-hmm. And I'm not talking about a few years ago. I'm talking about just even last year, in September, in August, in July, the entire season. He was a phenomenal pitcher. And it just hasn't shown itself here in Arizona, you know, four or five starts into his Diamondback career. You know, you'd hope, if you're a D-back, that things are going to, you know, you're always optimistic that, hey, the next start out is going to be the one. And certainly the start against Bumgarner in San Francisco last week.
He was great.
You know, that probably allayed a lot of fears. Like, okay, now he's back.
Yep, yep.
And then he goes out on Monday against St. Louis, or Tuesday, I'm sorry, whatever day it was, Monday or Tuesday.
Monday, yeah.
And, Monday. And just, I know he got the win, but that's not a Zach Greinke type win. You don't give up six or seven earned runs.
Sure.
And come out waving the flag like, hey, I'm back, especially after the outing he had the week before in San Francisco.
Yeah, well, that's a really interesting stuff there. I'll let you go off that. I appreciate your time and insight as always. Thanks.
Brad, take care, buddy.
You got it. There's Pedro Gomez, ESPN baseball analyst and insider. Wow. How about that, E?
When you say insider, sometimes for some finger quote insiders, they don't give you insight. That, what you just heard, was definitely insider news. Zach Greinke, huh? Hearing he may be injured. Well, that's news to pretty much everyone.
Yeah, that's strong.
Wow.
That's really strong. Todd Graham is next. Arizona State head football coach. The draft is tomorrow. I want to talk with Todd, what he's hearing about Westerman and DJ and Lucien and Burkle and all those guys around ASU. And I also need to talk to him about his quarterback for the coming season. That's next. I'm Brad Sussmad. Joined now about Todd Graham. We saw Coach Graham last night at the National Football Foundation event, and I did talk to him about the draft being tomorrow. And his players, I thought it'd be great to have him come on board here for a couple of minutes. I'm Brad Sussmad, Football AZ. Coach, how are you?
I'm doing well. How are you doing?
Doing great, Todd. You spoke with Bill Belichick, you said last night, about your players, and I'm sure you've talked to several other coaches. What is your expectation about tomorrow night for your players?
Well, you know, we feel good about, you know, our guys. I think we've got a great reputation and the type of people, young men that we're putting out, the character, and, you know, our guys are, you know, excelling in every area, you know, academically, on the field, off the field. And so I'm excited. I'm really excited about tomorrow, especially having two local products, you know, Christian and DJ Foster, you know, guys that that come right from here in the valley and are getting an opportunity to you know, have all their dreams come true, playing at the next level, and just you know what that means to us. And both those guys have been really special to us. So, you know, I look for Christian obviously to be the, you know, he's got, you know, anywhere from second to third round is what, you know, who knows where that's going to be, but I think he'll be a high pick. And then DJ's gotten a lot of interest, so I you know, I anticipate that both those guys will be drafted. And then I've had a lot of interest, you know, with Devin Lucien coming on late, you know, that he could be a late rounder. I think Berkovici could be a late rounder. Carrington, Longino, our guys. I mean, I think we'll have a lot of guys get free agent deals that have a good chance of making teams. So, you know, we got quite a few guys, you know, that are, you know, I think going to get picked up by teams. And look for, you know, Christian and DJ probably be at the, you know, be the two that are the most likely to be drafted first. And then I think you take, You know, I think Devin's a guy that could be a late pick. Lloyd could be a late pick. Longino could be a late pick. And you got V, Nick Kelly, Cherry, Burko could be a late pick. But all those guys I feel pretty good about that. You know, I'd be surprised if they didn't get, you know, free agent deals.
Todd, when take the fans behind the scenes here of what it's like for you leading up to the draft, and who do you hear from and what are they looking for from you on these potential players for their organizations?
Well, you know, most of the information, you know, they get, you know, following the season. They all come in and they'll come in and watch film, and then obviously on pro day I do a lot of visiting and extensive just interviews with teams and talking to them about our players, and then they'll call and have different questions about different guys, and so I think one of the big things too is it's really you know, they do their homework, you know, and teams are different. You know, some teams are very, very, very thorough and detailed with it. I think a lot of teams, you know, are really doing most of their interviewing and stuff with the player and want to meet them face-to-face. And then they go by the facts. They look at their transcript. They look at, the overall works of the player and with the film and all that. And so it's a very – some teams are very, very extensive, and some teams they go quiet a little bit on you because they don't want – it's very close to the vest because they don't want me – you know, if they have a real strong interest in a guy, they really don't want you to know because they don't want other teams to know. And they want to get guys – the main focus, they want to get guys that value, you know, they want to get guys that they think are, you know, ultimately that they think are third, fourth round guys they want to be able to get, you know, in the seventh round, or they want to get guys that they think are a fifth or sixth round pick and they want to get them as free agents. And so, you know, that's what they're mostly looking for. You know, the guys at the top, it's pretty, you know, it's pretty set, you know, and not a lot of questions asked about a lot of those guys.
A guy like DJ Foster, for instance, there's been talk of him, and it started last year, of being another Percy Harvin. I don't think that's really fair to a kid, but nonetheless, it was out there. What do you see him doing at the next level in terms of position? Do teams talk to you about that, or they've already made their minds up, Todd?
Different teams look at him differently. I mean, but I personally, you know, think that he's a hybrid running back. You know, he's a guy that can play running back, very physical. I mean, what we did with him for the first 3 years here, I think, is what DJ's true. You know, he's a hybrid. You know, a guy that can do a light play inside receiver, and he also is a very, very good running back and can do all the things out of the backfield catching. He's very physical in pass protection. I don't think that, you know, he's an outside receiver, you know, and so I think most people are looking at him as a running back / you know, slot receiver.
Lucien, Pro Football Focus, just one of many sites that have put him down as a sleeper, perhaps the best top sleeper in this year's draft. What are they seeing in him? I think once he got healthy, he showed what he was all about.
Well, I mean, we only had, you know, 6 months with him, and I think he really responded to the structure and the discipline of our program, and he developed. I think, Dell Alexander did a great job with him, and he was really productive. I mean, the bottom line, he's fast, he's explosive, he's can hurt you downfield. He's a physical player, and he's a very confident player, and you know, he's a guy that I know. Mike Berkovici thought a lot of, you know, he was a guy who was really his go-to guy. And so, you know, I look for, you know, Devin has the interest has soared on him. And, I look for him to be a, you know, I know he's going to get an opportunity, whether he's a late pick or not, I don't know, but, we'll see. But I would not be surprised if he wasn't picked, you know, in the sixth or seventh round.
All right, before I get you out of here, I'm going to get asked this if I don't ask you, and you're not going to say to me, I know this, but where are you at with your quarterback for next year? You can just talk about that for the fans.
Yeah,
you did a little
bit
last night, and you know where I'm going with this. They all want to know what's going on.
Yeah, well, you know, I mean, honestly, I think we made great progress, you know, in the 15 days in spring, and obviously during bowl practice, one of the reasons why I wanted to get, you know, Chip in here was so that he could start working with those guys and start developing those guys. And I think that was critical to their development. And made a lot of progress, and we were very strategic, you know, in spring practice because we have four new offensive linemen, mm-hmm. and we're going to have a new quarterback, and all three of the guys are guys that don't have a lot of experience, and so we were very strategic in how we, you know, what we did. We were very simple, you know, defensively, and we didn't try to, you know, make it just too adverse for them, and they responded very, very well. I think the offensive line developed very, very well this spring. Still got a lot of work to do, and I think all three quarterbacks developed and you know, just, you know, one of the things I always try to do, obviously I'm not going to say who the starter is going to be, and nor do have we named that, or, you know, honestly, you know, we're not at a point right now that we're going to do that, but we won't name the starter until the week of the game, the first game, but you know, our players will know when we come out of a summer camp and we come out of, you know, fall camp, we come out of the first 2 weeks, you know, they knew Taylor Kelly was going to be the guy. We just announced the week of the game. But I really think that we made great progress there. And I feel really confident that the three guys we've got, and, you know, Dylan Sterling Cole coming in is one of the most talented quarterbacks I think we've ever signed. I feel good about the group. I feel good about the development where we're at, and I like the fact that these guys, we recruited them, and so that they can run and pass, all three of them. Highly intelligent guys, guys that understand the system. All three of them are, you know, are young as
right.
well.
Right.
And but they're going to be able to extend plays, and that's something that I think is really going to help us. And I think these guys are going to have the luxury with Cam Smith back and a veteran Tim White, and you know, with Jalen Harvey had a tremendous spring. Coach Norvell's had a big impact. EJ Jefferson, I think they're going to come back to, you know, with Kalen Ballage and Mario Richards and Gump and you know, Nick Ralston. They got, you know, they got a very, very experienced veteran receiving core and running back group. And then probably the bright spot this spring that was something that stuck out to me was the, you know, development of our tight ends, J.J. Wilson and Raymond Epps, you know, with Cody being out, really had great springs and got some young guys doing well there also. So I really like the development of our tight ends. So, you know, quarterback and offensive line was where the inexperience is going to be. And but we feel good. I really do. I feel really good coming out of camp that we're going to be fine. We just got to, you know, we got to have somebody obviously emerge, and then you know, I feel really good about the young men we have at that position.
Appreciate your time and insight as always, Todd. Thanks.
You bet.
There's Todd Graham with us, coach, Arizona State. Draft is tomorrow night. A little bit on the quarterbacks as well. Sports360AZ.com. We partner with the Arizona Republic AZ Central Sports. I'm Brad Sussmat. Thanks again to Todd Graham for being with us. Always good to catch up with the coach. I was at an event last night at Arizona State, and Todd was there speaking to the National Football Foundation. The NFF does great stuff here in the Valley, and I think that most people don't even know what they're all about. And it was nice to be there. There were a lot of high school coaches. Coach Kush was there last night. His son Dan was there. Some of the old guard from ASU, guys that really do care about the programs, the John Beblings and the Nap Lawrences and the Fast Eddies and those guys, they were all there. And it's just, there's some really good people trying to figure it out over at ASU. I think that's the best way to put it. I was at a lunch yesterday where Rocky Harris, who's Ray's number two over at ASU, Ray Anderson's number two, he was doing a business update on where Arizona State is and everything. It was a fascinating conversation. There's like 30 business leaders, and he was very direct about how Arizona State is not competing against pro sports. And I happen to agree with that. When I hear this nonsensical debate about, well, there's people not showing up at games because the market's too fragmented, there's too many sports going on, there's too many. No, it's just because teams here haven't won consistently. It's really not that hard. Like, I think it's smart that they're taking the Sun Devil Stadium part and Frank Cush Field and reducing the number of seats. Chase Field, people will say, was built too large. I do agree with that, okay? Soccer, they built soccer stadiums at 15,000 to 20,000. Why is that? Because they're always overflowing, and people will be like, wow, there's got to be a real demand there. So they were forward-thinking in building soccer stadiums around this country. We're going to build a soccer stadium here in Arizona. It's going to happen with Arizona United. And the MLS may be here by 2018, may be here, if everything can continue on the trajectory that they're heading. Is that another team that's going to siphon away from others? No, I don't think it is, A. B, it's not as important for owners to fill seats in stadiums anymore because the television contracts are so big. The minute the TV contracts dry up, then these franchises are in trouble. But as long as the Pac-12 network is sitting there, even though nobody can see it unless you have Cox Cable, it's not up on DirecTV or Dish, as long as there is this network, there's all this money coming in. Eric, it's next Tuesday we have Greg Byrne in studio, right?
That's correct.
So Greg's going to be here next Tuesday, and I'm going to do a business of sports thing with him, you know, as regards to U of A. We've done this with Ray before. We've done this with the athletic directors within the state. And I'm on this rant about it because, you know, there's a group like the NFF that's out there trying to support football at high school, college, pro level. Very much the same as what we do. We do high school, college, and pro. We don't just do pro. There's plenty of football that's out there, but we also do other sports across the state as well. We do a lot of golf. I've had some people approach me about opening just a golf platform. I did a speaking thing at ASU yesterday, and some people afterwards that asked me, when are you going to do a hockey-only platform? They all kind of work together. You can't be that niche. But Arizona State, and Todd was talking last night about how there'll never be another stadium built during his tenure as coach, right? So he's experiencing something that most people are not going to, in your lifetime, this could be another 50, 60, 70 years before they do another stadium. We're never going to see another stadium built for Arizona State. And he's right about that. It's kind of interesting in that regard. So when he's out recruiting kids, he can point to that. It's a cool time to be involved on the college front. You look at some of the hires that Ray Anderson has made, and he did not hire Todd. And people have pointed that out over and over and over. But Ray has hired some pretty dynamic people. I think Bobby Hurley was a pretty good hire. He's less experienced than some of the main people out there. But I liked how I saw him come along as the season progressed. I think he's going to do fine there. Sean Miller, we'll see what happens with him down at U of A. You know, Sean's name is going to get kicked around for some of these NBA jobs eventually, if not already in place with the Lakers. That's just how it is with him. His name is always attached to some things more than Tucson. I'm going on this because when I hear what's going on in the Valley, and I'm all about the Valley. I'm not about one team or one sport. And I think Todd and where Arizona State is, they have a golden opportunity here in the next couple of years. When there's new stadiums, people want to come check it out. I think Sun Devil Stadium is going to become a player in the concert industry again. There were some great concerts. Did you go to the Stones, E, or did you go to U2 or any of those?
I have never, ever been to a concert at Sun Devil Stadium, but
remember,
I bet it would be great to go on a nice night.
Do you remember when they had them?
Sure, U2. Yeah, lots of big concerts back in the early 90s, late 80s.
And Todd wasn't talking about this last night. This is more just me talking with people over there. I think that we're going to see them become a player in the concert business. We're kind of confused right now here in the Valley. Like Glendale taking over trying to convince the Coyotes to stay, give it up. It's not happening. Robert wanting a new building, saving money on his coach and just going through a period where right now they're just kind of sort of there. The Diamondbacks, you know, the stuff from Pedro today about Greinke was really good. If you missed it, it repeats over and over and over. We'll put it up on the podcast. The stuff about Greinke and how there's something wrong with him, he's not able to put a finger on it. If it's something physical, if it's just his overall health, but there is something from Pedro's view, and even some scouts have said to Pedro, there's something wrong there. He's not right, I think is the best way to put it. And it's at a time where if the Diamondbacks don't have Greinke out on the field with that amount of investment, whew, man, that's a tough deal. And they're hanging in there right now. And he may get himself straightened out. It may just be a blip. But I don't know if you missed Pedro, it was about 20 minutes ago. He doesn't just come on the air as a pop gun. That's not like him. He's definitely hearing some stuff. Really good stuff there. Sports360AZ.com. We partner with the Arizona Republic AZ Central Sports. Our football show is on tonight on Fox Sports Arizona before and after the Diamondbacks game. That show will feature Devin Lucien, will feature Peter King, will feature Todd Graham, and a really cool piece that Jordan Hamm put together on Christian Muir, this female kicker over at Marcos Denisa. Her story is blowing up beyond Arizona. We'll have that story tonight on the Football AZ Show as well. Thanks for being with us.